Welcome to Let's Talk About Test Baby, a fortnightly show where we tie ourselves in knots over testing. Hello listeners, welcome to episode 65. I'm here with Matt again. Hello Matt.
Hello.
And this week we're going to be talking about metrics, which is an episode we have already recorded once before, but it was in a pub and it did not go well for us in the end. Because that pub was really loud, which really surprised me, because I've been in that pub loads of times, it's been dead, and then all of a sudden, people everywhere, crying babies, it was terrible.
Yeah, pub background is a good sound, but is a bit, you can't control it.
Yeah, it was. It went from ambient sound into just noise. So yeah, so we're going to do, this is a re-recording about metrics in testing, because it's something that comes up quite a bit, and I'm kind of interested in it, because I kind of do see both sides on the metrics issue. Like, I understand the need for them, but I also like there's no good way of doing them for the majority of people, but especially testers.
Yeah, testing itself seems like quite a difficult topic to measure, because I guess it's more of a supporting role than most other roles. So, yeah, it can be quite difficult to measure what good testing is or what bad testing is.
Exactly.
So I think we originally started this with a kind of a question of, can you measure testing and what would be good to measure with testing? But I'd like to start with why measure to begin with?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the reason I am interested in this is because I want to know from, as a new tester point of view, how do I track how well I'm doing and what areas I need to improve in? And metrics seems like the obvious way of testing, of like tracking these things, of what am I doing good at, what am I doing bad at, where do I need to improve?
Yeah, and the same kind of, how do I put it? The same kind of motivation comes from the wider business, let's say. So often this, I feel like this question gets asked because someone in a testing role is being asked by senior managers, we want to measure what you're doing, give us some measurements. So then that's why I'd go straight to, well, why do they want to measure? Because if you were running a company and you've got all these different departments, you're basically trying to say, well, okay, we've got these departments, we've got testing or development or however you want to split it up. Which ones are performing quite well and which ones aren't, and why are they struggling, and then where do we need to direct our attention? So it's all for the same reason again, about, well, we want to improve and we want to keep on top of what if anything's going wrong, and we want an easy way of doing that and tracking that without having to always talk about it, which is kind of where I'm going to go next to this. But that motivation, which is to want to improve, it's not an evil motivation as it might come across.
No, and I just wanted to track how the team's working together or how the company's doing as a whole. It's not an evil thing to want to do. It's just when you want to boil that down to simple numbers, you lose a lot of stuff and you can't in some cases.
Yeah.
And I think, like, before I was a tester, I worked in a pharmacy. I was a dispensing assistant. And it got to that point because of cuts that the NHS had to make and stuff that all of a sudden pharmacies weren't profitable from just giving out prescriptions. You had to sell things as well. And so suddenly I became in this position where I wasn't profitable as a person if all I did was my job of dispensing. And then I moved into testing and I realised that that's kind of the same, in that there's no obvious way in which I'm profitable if all I'm doing is all. If I'm doing stuff that can't be measured, there's no obvious way of going, oh, this is the profit you've brought into the company.
Yeah.
And I just realised that I've just moved from one role where it's not obvious where what use I am when it looks at pure numbers, to another role where, again, and when you look at pure numbers, it's never that obvious what use I am as a person.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of think some of this is made even harder recently when I think we mentioned this in the Test Bash episode about the fact that the only visible proof of your work traditionally has been test cases and bugs, right? So then the obvious thing is to count those things and go, well, if you're doing really good testing, then you should have lots and lots of test cases and lots of bugs. And that's a way of, well, some way of tracking that testing is doing something. But now we kind of talk about, well, actually, do we need the test cases? And is it efficient to write bug reports all the time? Is it better just to tell someone about the bug and have them fix it, or write a comment on Jira or whatever? So then how do you, you can't really count that then. So then what do you count? How do you prove that this is going on still?
Exactly. And things like if you do the whole shift left thing, if you prevent bugs from being built into the system because you've done all the work up front on planning and requirements, and if you've reduced test cases because you've increased testability and you've pushed the testing upwards as much as you can, then all of a sudden you've reduced the actual concrete output of your work. But everyone agrees that that's the better way of doing it. But you've just decreased bug reports and test cases, so you have nothing to show, but you do because you've made everything better.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of where I feel I am right now is, how do you measure this? How do you prove this is worthwhile? To kind of flip this around a little bit, from managing my own team, I started with another person in this company, and we both started building up this team of testers between ourselves. And from our past experience of being used to, people asking for metrics on counting test cases and that kind of stuff, that's kind of what we started with because we didn't know any better. That's not quite true. We did know better than that. We knew that counting test cases felt kind of wrong, but we didn't really have any better ideas, so we went with that. But we quickly realized, actually, do we want people to write these test cases? And is this really a true reflection of, this was good, this was bad, or anything like that? So we quickly decided to get rid of that idea, and instead we're just a little bit more liberal with how we manage the team. So instead of judging people by how many test cases they've written or bugs they've written up or whatever, we just talk to them, basically. So that's kind of my view from managing a team, is going, well, observing the performance of each tester in the team is more about talking to them and just getting more kind of informal, qualitative kind of feedback rather than quantitative stuff. But maybe not everyone's in a position where they can actually do that. So,
yeah, it's hard. I mean, when I spoke to Lee Rathbone, he pointed out that moving to Agile means there are less places for people to hide. So it makes it a lot easier to see people's progress, at least on a project, because there's scrums and things like that. But there's plenty of people not doing that kind of stuff and thinking that there's no benefit to all these meetings and things like that. And so you have to put the effort in to actually go and do this stuff. And not everyone has the time or space to do that. And even then, if their managers still want a nice lot of numbers at the end of the day, you've got to try and boil that good qualitative information down into something quantitative for the higher ups, the C-level staff who just have got tons of stuff to do. They just want a report at the end of today that just says yes this much or no this much.
Yeah. So I can appreciate that some people are in that position where you can't just say no, I'm not going to count anything. I'm just going to give you, I'll tell you what was good or bad. Maybe not everyone's in a position to do that, or it's a situation where it's not practical, perhaps. Maybe people are separated by distance or time, maybe in different time zones. I don't know. There might be some situations where it's not possible to verbally or, I don't know, just in written form, discuss how well things are going or not. Or maybe it just needs to be done so quickly that it has to be some kind of number. I don't know. But you might not be in a position where you can change that. So surely there are. So we've talked about a couple of metrics there, which are counting test cases and counting bugs. But what do you think people could measure that would be better than those?
Yeah, see, I was thinking about that, and I'm not sure, because I mean, I guess at the end of the day, you need to figure out what exactly you want to get out of the things that you're measuring, because you might think that number of bugs or number of test cases shows you how much work people are doing. But is it actually, all those can be gamed? you can gain those, and if people know that you're tracking those, then they're going to game it, whether they do it consciously or not. They're going to go, oh, well, actually, I'll log all these little things that I would normally just go talk to a dev about, because that'll keep my numbers up. So I guess it's a case of, what do you want to measure and what behaviours do you want to encourage? Can you do, say, customer satisfaction instead? Or the metrics of the final product or project. So we're an agency who build websites. We'll have, usually we do marketing as well for them. So we can track how successful those sites have been, how successful our efforts have been after go live. And so we can use that to say what's worked, what hasn't, how has this gone, as well as the things like, were we on time, were we under budget, and all the rest of it.
Yeah, so we use more kind of department-based metrics or group.
Yeah, or team-based.
Yeah, metrics. Yeah, exactly. Because it kind of goes back to the start when I said that testing is kind of more of a supportive role. It's not like a distinct, separate role where, I mean, traditionally it's been seen like that, where you write the code and then you test it. But really, it's not you can't really separate the two, because if you find a problem, it needs to be fixed by a developer usually. And really, a lot of the recent thinking about this that I've come across is more about, it's either not done yet or it's done. You know, it's like in progress, and whatever the work is to get it done, that's whoever needs to get it done does it, right? It doesn't really make sense to separate them out, because you can't easily manage the two separate like that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, like on teams I've worked at, we've all picked up and done what we can to help alleviate time. If I've got time because it's at the start of a sprint and there's something that I can do that would normally fall to one of the devs or the lead dev or even the project manager, if they're under, we'll just pick it up and take it, because it's a team effort as opposed to individual. It's not seen as a step. And just like, I spend a lot of time in workshops right at the start of a project, because the company know that there's some value in having me there looking over the requirements and thinking of how I would test it, essentially, and bringing up scenarios as I do that. But there's no way of measuring that other than I spent this much time in a workshop.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe you could do things like that. You could count or track how much time testers are spending on areas, perhaps. And then weigh up. I mean, it feels a bit inefficient to me, because you still, no matter what number you give, no matter what metric you give, you still need some more context to it, surely. I mean, even if you said, like one of the ones we track at the moment is how many bugs are being reported by through from support or through from customers. And that's kind of like a quality score, really. But that number on its own doesn't really give you the full picture. It tells you something. It's like a trigger to go look into something, but it doesn't really say. So if it's one month we have lots of problems being raised, it could be that we've just deployed something brand new and we'd expected it, that there would be some problems. Whereas another month when we have a lot of problems but you're not really deployed anything new, that would be a surprising thing and probably a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But you need that extra context. Otherwise, you know, you could be saying, well, the testing wasn't very good because you didn't find all these problems. And it's like, well, we didn't. We expected that there would be lots of problems because we're not going to find them all. And this is a brand new piece of software. And also, one of the recent things as well is the ideas of lean agile and continuous delivery, which is the idea of putting things out as soon as possible to learn from them, basically, to say, we're going to put something out and we don't know if it's good or bad. We're actually releasing it on purpose to try and find that out. So, and things like, you know, doing like A/B testing or, you know, betas and stuff like that, you're expecting there to be problems anyway. So, yeah, there's always some extra context around those metrics. You can't just use the metric by itself. So every time I try and think of a metric, I'm like, oh, but it doesn't feel quite right. It's never going to be good enough to say, if this number is this amount, that equals good.
Yeah, and that becomes, and that leads into a question of what is good enough. Like, if the company knows, and if the people who Yeah, I'm arguing myself here. But if the company or the people who need their numbers know that it is contextless, is that okay? But if that is okay, then what is the use of those reports? Why are they doing them in the first place? It's kind of a weird cycle of, if you want something good enough, you're going to need, for anyone, you're going to need more than just raw numbers.
Yeah.
But if you, and yeah, that's basically what it boils down to, my whole argument.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what team member you're looking at, if you're just going to give raw numbers, it's going to be an incomplete picture. And if they're good enough, you need to think about what you're measuring and why.
And like you say, what behaviours you're trying to encourage, that's definitely, you definitely nail on the head there when you said that, because, like I say, you have people start gaming the system, basically.
Yeah, it's like when salespeople will put through, I think it was you who might raise this point when we record this first time, that salespeople will put through sales, they'll wait till the end of the month to put the sale through, because that makes the sales figures on their next month better.
Yeah.
And they're not like overreaching their goals too much on this one, that will push their overall goal up again when that comes to reviewing.
Yeah, exactly.
They've gamed that for years. That's basically an accepted practice of that now. But if you think about it, you're encouraging people to hold back on things. These things are so accepted, but if you sit down and think about it, we shouldn't be encouraging this.
No, exactly. Yeah, you got to be very careful which metric you pick, because yeah, any metric you pick will encourage a certain kind of behavior. But that doesn't necessarily mean metrics are bad. It's just you got to be very careful, I think. So when I started to, I started asking around on the Testers IO Slack team about this a few months ago. And one of the suggestions about it was, for example, measuring the percentage of production deployments without a critical defect reported in 24 hours or a week. And I quite like metric like that, because it's focused on, it's going to encourage something that you kind of want this behavior anyway, which is people keeping track of, is there a defect in being released in 24 hours? And are we, you know, making sure there aren't that too many? And even if there are, that we're on top of them, basically.
And I like that it's a snapshot. Because obviously, when someone's been live for absolutely ages, things change and there's always issues. But that snapshot where, in theory, it's going to be stable for the first week, so you're not going to be doing too many changes unless something has gone horribly wrong. I like that little snapshot of, this is what it looked like at this space and time. This is as good as a picture as we're going to get of what we put live.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, everyone's going to agree with that we don't want critical. And I mean, the definition of critical defect is an interesting one, but everyone's going to agree that, you know, important big deal bugs are not things that we want to have happen shortly after a release. So.
Oh yeah, you need to have a def. But I assume if you've got a support thing going up, you'll have an internal definition of critical. Like ours is, the site is non-transactional. The site's down completely, or people can't log in to the back end of the site, and there's some other ones, but it's very much whatever we've built the site for, it cannot really do at all.
Yeah, but I mean, I can think of some examples in my company where something would be said is really, really important. It's like a horrific thing, but it's because it's for one particular client, and that particular client gives us a lot of hell, let's say. Or they pay us a lot more money. And although they pay us a lot more money, relative to all the other customers we have, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean we need to go panic and throw everything behind saving that particular customer. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
oh yeah.
Sometimes some people's perspective, to them, this is the most important thing. But when we think of the wider picture, it's not quite. So what's critical seems to vary depending who you ask.
Oh yeah, I think there definitely has to be something that is internally decided. And that's another thing, you've got to have these things defined somewhere. It's pointless having these numbers. If you are going to track these things, it's pointless having them and then going, well, I'm sure this tells me something about a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can't arbitrarily set like thresholds, but you've got to at least have an idea of what you think is okay, or use the first few months as, right, this is a baseline, let's go from there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you may as well just throw your darts at a board and see what comes out.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and I'm trying to think of any other kind of useful metrics really, because I feel like we're not really giving metrics a good rep here. Basically, it's like, I mean, that is kind of my general opinion on them from my personal use and personally having people ask me for them, is I really don't like them. I don't, in the sense of, I would rather have a question I need to answer, and I need metrics to give me some hard data to back up some argument that I'm trying to make. But that's a little bit different to someone saying, we just need to say whether things are going well or badly. And then if it's going what we think is bad, then look into it. Because when you do that, then you're basically saying, the way I take that is, well, basically what you're saying is, you don't want to talk to me about whether this is going good or badly. You just want to have that thing. And then when it goes badly, you're just going to come tell me and go, why is this going badly? Make it better, basically. And it's like, well, it needs to be a bit more of a discussion. So, but surely there are some better metrics. So
I do like the one about critical issues found in production within a certain number of time, with a certain amount of time even. I like that one because that is, like you say, it's encouraging good behaviour. It's a nice snapshot. I think that's decent. Everything else, I can think of examples where it might not work, which is, because I mean, like, there's, you know, are the customers happy? Is the product selling? But those things are so also subjective, I guess. Like, the numbers will be there, but again, if you released a product and then a massive competitor came out with something out of the blue and that split the market, then that's going to affect the numbers. It's not necessarily anything to do with you.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's so hard to think of things that work.
Yeah.
Just.
The another one I thought of was response time. So, you know, like, critical problems raised, how fast do we react to it and how fast can we fix it? Because one of the things that we like to improve with, like I say, the ideas like DevOps and continuous delivery is the idea that we're releasing very small changes all the time so that our reaction speed is quite fast. So then it kind of makes sense to then go, well, okay, if our target is to make reaction speed faster, then we probably should measure that and say, are we getting better at that? But like you say, can I keep thinking of examples where that might be a bad thing though? Because what if then people are just rushing to decisions and then quickly rushing fixes just because they know that they're being measured on how fast they react?
Yeah.
And so just being fast is not necessarily good just in itself. So then you might say, well, then we'll have checklists and make people always read this checklist. And if they've not read it, then they've not done their job properly. But then I can imagine them having the ridiculously long checklists and all this kind of stuff. So
yeah. It's hard. I mean, I'm looking at the notes that we've made and just things like, I mean, some of the stuff we put down was we put like the ones that we've mentioned, things like our budgets and schedules being met. And there are so many projects that I've been on where we've met the budget and we've met the schedule, but there have been issues with the project, so it's not been a good project, or vice versa. We've blown the budget, or we've agreed with the client that we've blown the schedule, but it's because we've wanted to make something really good and we've come up with an idea that's a bit more complex, but it's a really good thing that we've produced. And then you can measure happiness, but again, it's hard to, I'm just imagining giving loads of developers and everyone a form in their review where you had to like tick, like, how satisfied are you on a scale of 1 to 5 with your job?
Yeah.
And just see some of the stuff that comes back because no one's going to care.
Yeah. Although,
just threes.
Yeah. I've seen that before. But yeah, but this, like, it keeps coming back to me, really. It's like a circular debate. Like, I'm like, oh, I could measure this. And then I'm like, yeah, but if it's just a number, it doesn't make sense. So then it's really just about talking about it. And so I'm like, well, yeah, because I always think, people always think about metrics and think of numbers. And sometimes, you know, you can measure in a qualitative sense where you just say, or a subjectively qualitative sense, I guess, maybe a way of phrasing that. But if you just ask people and have their anecdotal, you know, opinions, that's still measuring, even if it's not a number, you still be able to say, well, using our judgment, we can say that people are happier than they were before. Well, people are clearly people know when people are unhappy, generally speaking. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, when you have that effect when you walk into an office and you know that people are all quite unhappy. Exactly. So it's, you can kind of measure that, but it's not, like I say, you can't really have people fill in forms and stuff. It's not really going to tell you Well, it might tell you a little bit, but it's not going to give you very good information, I don't think. But if you had, I'm just thinking, if you were like a CEO of a company and you're like, well, how's this department doing? If I ask that manager, is your department happy? That's at least something, I guess. Because if they're like, well, this department's unhappy and these are the reasons why, to me, that's like what you should be trying to achieve, not going, oh, your happiness score is 9, so.
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell does that mean? Like,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think now. There must be something there.
Maybe this is a good call to action. Maybe people are doing amazing metrics and we're just not thinking of them. Metrics that aren't like counting test cases or counting bugs or whatever. So, you know, this could be a call to action for people to get in touch if they are doing amazing metrics, because I keep thinking there's got to be something somewhere that's fairly standard and objective to measure. I mean, testing specifically, but also any sort of development that isn't just our projects running to budget and to schedule, because that is a team measurement. It's not specifically, it's not specifically measuring how your developers are doing or how your testers are doing or how your project managers are doing. And so it becomes a bit fuzzy.
Yeah, if anyone can think of anything that we can't think of, I'm definitely interested to hear that, because, I would love to have some better metrics I can provide people when I'm in this situation. Fortunately, not right now, I'm not really in this situation. The reason I think I'm talking a lot about kind of like department or team kind of metrics is because at the moment, in the team I'm working on, I am quite focused on the kind of team scrum kind of metrics, so like velocity and that kind of stuff, which is about all of us. It's not just me as a tester, it's the whole team basically, and saying, well, why is our velocity getting lower or higher, or, you know, that kind of stuff, which to me seems a bit more relevant than, well, how many bugs did I report? Or, you know, when I think about it, like, what is the main thing that I provide value as a tester? And it's obviously information, right? I'm providing useful information, hopefully, to people. But how do you measure something so subjective as information? It's like, and so varied, like, it takes many forms. Information could be a bug report, it could be
a conversation,
everyone learning about something, or a conversation.
Yeah, it's difficult. So I'm going to do some main points. So I think the first thing, if you are going to do metrics, is figure out what you actually want to measure and what behaviours do you want to encourage.
Yes.
Or if not what you want to encourage, what should you not be encouraging? Because it's fine if you want to measure the number of test cases that your testers produce, but that means you're going to get a lot of useless test cases because they're just going to write whatever to make the numbers up.
Yeah, exactly.
So once you figure out what you want to test or what behaviours you want to encourage, you then need to figure out what do you actually need? Do you need numbers? Or will conversations and those kind of reports where it is more prose work or bullet points work for you?
Yeah, I would definitely, if someone's asking you for metrics, ask them why do they want the metrics? What do they want to learn? And start with that and figure out if there's another way of answering that.
Like when someone comes to you with a requirement that is, I want this specific functionality, usually our first question is, well, what do you want to do with that? It's the same thing here. Always ask, well, what do you want to do first? Because you might be wrong in what you want. I think then, if you figured out those things, it's making sure you have the context that you need to go with those, and making sure that if the metrics are delivered to you, or you can deliver the metrics in a way that makes sense, you can include all the context that you need without swamping down too many details. Because I can totally understand that people don't want to be reading like pages and pages of reports, because there'll be one from like every team lead or whatever. But you still need that context. So there needs to be that balance there of how much context do you need and what's the best way of getting you that, along with whatever metrics you've actually requested.
Yeah, exactly. It's like bug reports themselves. Bug reports need to be succinct, but also have the right amount of detail so they're well understood. But you're not going to ramble too much and people are going to still read it.
Another thing that I've just realised from what you've just said is the metrics by themselves aren't really that useful. You need to be able to have, like, if you get the context, you might get something actionable. Like, bug reports generally have to kind of be actionable. It has to be, we need to do this, or ideally it would do this instead. Like, a sort of call to, this is what we actually want to do. Whereas And metrics should be the same, right? Because you're getting this information and chances are, you go, even if everything's going fine, you might want to go to people and go, good job, this is all awesome. But if they're not fine, you need to have those points of where, what can I do to help? So there might need to be some context to help you with those actionable points to actually do something with the metrics.
Yeah, which goes back to when you're saying, when someone asks you for a metric, asking them why do they want it is really important, because if they just want a metric just because they've got a number and then they'd have to think about it again, then quite a dangerous use of metrics, really.
Yeah, you could just make them up at this point.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really matter, does it? If you're not going to look at the number, then what's the point?
Just write 42 all the time, it's fine.
Yeah. Whereas, like I said before, really I prefer the use of metrics for a reason that I already have. So I want to go get the metrics because there's something I want to learn and this data will help me understand it, rather than I just like a number and then I'm maybe going to look into that number at some point. But surely there's got to be a reason for the metric. Otherwise, yeah, they're just a number.
Yeah. And I guess if you're in a position where you need just a number, make it as easy for you and your team as possible.
Yeah, I definitely, having been kind of the opposite side of this fence where a manager's been asking me for numbers and it feels like, why are they asking me for this number? It's nonsense. Don't blame your managers too much, because your managers are probably going to ask for something from their managers and they probably don't agree with it either. So yeah, it's not always their fault.
Yeah, exactly. There might be a reason that your manager's doing stupid things, and that might be that their manager's telling them to do something stupid.
Yeah. I try and look for opportunities with situations like that, say to whichever manager it is, say, okay, you want these metrics, but why do you want them? Is it because someone else needs them? Can we work together to make this a bit better or something? I don't know. Just be more supportive, I guess, because people are not necessarily doing things, because like, it's all back to the start, really. People not necessarily doing things for, you know, evil reasons that they want to prove you're doing a bad job or whatever. It's because they want to somehow improve something, usually. So trying to find another way of being able to achieve that is hopefully a bit more supportive.
Exactly.
And that is the end of episode 65. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back in a fortnight with episode 66. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, we are on Twitter at Let's Talk Tests. Let's Talk About Tests at gmail.com is the email address. You can catch me on Skype on Let's Talk About Tests. And if all that is enough for you, you can rate and review us on iTunes, because that always helps. And yeah, see you next episode, which will be at the start of December, guys. What the hell? Yeah, bye!
Our planet will be just a point of light.